This morning is the final in a four-week sermon series on Unitarian Universalist history, but it's okay if you've missed the first 3 weeks. I think you'll be able to dive right in. In part one, I invited us to explore the question, why Unitarianism? The Unitarian half of our Unitarian Universalist heritage emerged from the Protestant Reformation of the 1500s and has roots stretching back to the beginning of the Jewish and Christian traditions. And in summary, to try to take not preach that 20-minute sermon again, right? We don't want to be here all morning. In summary, my response to that question of why Unitarianism is that its foundation in six diverse sources, they're listed on the back of your order of service, it makes for a religious movement that is particularly well-suited for the pluralistic postmodern world in which we find ourselves in the early 21st century, a place from which we can offer one another mercy and compassion and love in the midst of our diversity. In part two, we consider the question, why universalism? And the universalist half of our UU heritage traces its origins to the 1700s in North America and England, as well as to early influences going back to the beginning of the Christian tradition. And whereas Unitarianism has sometimes led down a road to extreme Emersonian individualism, just kind of individuals drawing from those six sources to build something just for themselves, universalism, that half of our heritage, is always calling us out of ourselves, from the particular to the universal, out of ourselves into the world, into a universal relationship with all of life. And although universalism began with the teaching of universal salvation for all in a next world, a rejection of the idea of hell, it has evolved to a call to love the hell out of this world. Last week in part three on the Secret Six, we reflected on the history of nonviolent activism, as well as the history of some Unitarians and Universalists calling for the use of violence when they deemed it justified. So looking at that balance between violence and nonviolence in UU history. And as you can see from your order of service, I'd originally intended to title this sermon, This Is That, Then Is Now, to continue to look at some contemporary parallels from UU history. But after the order of service had been printed, I realized a better title for this capstone sermon to this series, after asking why Unitarianism and why Universalism, was to ask why Unitarian Universalism, right? I was a little slow on the uptake there, but I got there. So we're going to explore that combined question this morning. And more than 50 years have passed since the 1961 merger of the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church in America. And for those of us who have only known a consolidated Unitarian Universalist Association, it can be unclear exactly how we came to have this very long 10-syllable name, Unitarian Universalism. Did any of you attend a Unitarian or a Universalist congregation before the merger? So a handful here and there. How many of them were Universalist? Any Universalists? Okay, so they were all Unitarian. Okay. Sometimes you actually say, okay, so if you, some, all right, exactly, this was, exactly. You also sometimes see Universalist Unitarian. There are a handful of those out there, of the 1,000-plus congregations that sort of came out of the Universalist heritage and wanted to emphasize that. The 2 weeks ago, I shared with you that famous joke about the difference between Unitarianism and Universalism, and that is that Universalists think that God is too good to damn people, and that the Unitarians think they're too good to be damned. That was the essential difference that they brought to the table. And underneath that joke is the tension that historically there was a significant class divide between the Unitarians, whose ministers tended to come from Harvard and so were very well educated and polished and from the upper classes, and the Universalists, whose ministers were frequently brilliant and charismatic, but often with little formal education. But as early as the late 1850s, before the Civil War, more than a century before the eventual consolidation in 1961, there were already initial talks about the Unitarians and the Universalists having a lot in common, and maybe we should combine resources and do things together. And part of what kept the two groups apart was noting, again, that there was really more social than theological differences that kept the two groups separate. Nevertheless, what drew them together was a shared theological liberalism. And in the 19th century, theological liberalism primarily meant a rejection of Calvinism. And if you talk to Calvinists then and now, one of the common ways that Calvinists self-describe themselves is with the flower and the acronym TULIP. Have any of you, who sat through a TULIP lecture before? Anybody? All right, I've got a few, okay. Well, you're going to get the mini one. I don't know how many times TULIP has been taught in Unitarian Universalist congregations, but you're going to get the 30-second version right now. So TULIP, T-U-L-I-P, the T stands for total depravity. It's a cheery beginning, right? They were a dour sort, those Calvinists. Total depravity. And that meant that because of humanity's original sin, we are humans totally depraved, and there's nothing we humans can do to save ourselves. So we must rely on God's grace alone. And that's where you heard that, you know, we were part of the radical Reformation, but there was another part of the Reformation that was like Calvin and Luther, and they taught things like grace alone, faith alone, scripture alone. So total depravity is part of that. The U is unconditional election. Being part of the saved and elect has nothing to do with us meeting any condition. Unconditional election. The choice and action is totally up to God. Limited atonement is L. Jesus' death on the cross was only for the elect. Jesus didn't die for all, only for the elect that were preordained, predestined. I is irresistible grace. The elect cannot resist or reject salvation. If you're part of the elect, you're part of the elect, whether you like it or not. Though if you're part of the elect, you probably like it because you're the elect. It works. It's circular, but it works internally. P is the perseverance of the saints. You may have also heard once saved, always saved. So if you're part of the elect, you always are. So that's TULIP. And I've taken the time to briefly describe that Calvinistic perspective because as we've been describing in the Tuesday night class that's about halfway through on comparing religions, that you really, the best way to understand your own religion is to compare it with another. Like an often analogy that gets made is, I really started to understand English grammar a lot better when I took German. That may have been true for others of you. So a common phrase in both linguistics and in religions is that to know one is to really know none. Because if you just know one, you don't even really know your own because you don't have anything to compare it and contrast it with. So I've kind of set up that TULIP and that Calvinism because that's what Unitarian and Universalism, they cut their teeth defining themselves against Calvinism. So, for example, as with almost all human endeavors, again, Unitarianism and Universalism, they weren't born in a vacuum. Our forebears learned to articulate what they desired and aspired to be and to do in opposition to Calvinism. And then they eventually came to define themselves more positively, but it started out in opposition to. So instead of total depravity, they taught, think of our principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. How different is that? Instead of limited atonement, they taught that God's love was for all. Instead of unconditional election, irresistible grace, perseverance of the saints, that it was all top down, it was either all God, not us, they emphasized human freedom and human responsibility, that what we do with our free will really matters and can change the world, and does change the world, sometimes for ill, sometimes for better. And over time, the Unitarians and the Universalists were brought together even more strongly as their theologically liberal rejection of Calvinism evolved into a robust religious pluralism that came to see the Christian tradition that they came out of, not as the one best religion, but as still in the mix, but as one among many, which doesn't make them relativists. Not anything goes, but Christianity became one among many legitimate religious paths. And although we now know today how the story ends with the 1961 merger, if we take a step back and consider that century-long movement from 1850s all the way through 1961, part of what kept the Unitarians and the Universalists apart, especially during the middle part of that period, so like the late 19th century and the early 20th century, was the centrality of liberal Christianity that maintained a lot longer in Universalism than it did in Unitarianism, and the growing strength of a science-based humanism in Unitarianism. Indeed, there was a real possibility for a while of the Universalists moving in a more traditional direction to merge with the Congregationalists, that group we know now today as the United Church of Christ. The joke, of course, is the Unitarians considering Christ, but that's a whole other thing to consider because they're the left side of liberal Protestantism, and then we're sort of the next paradigm shift over. What eventually led the Universalists further leftward theologically toward the Unitarians instead of toward the United Church of Christ is that the Universalists were rejected in 1946 when they submitted an application to the organization known today as the National Council of Churches. Because even though the Universalists perceived themselves as too Christian to be Unitarian, but the Christians perceived them as too liberal to be Christian. So they were sort of caught in the messy middle. At the same time, there was a movement within Universalism to claim the full promise of that word, universal, in Universalism, as about recognizing the universal kinship of all human beings in this world and moving toward a universal world religion, drawn from many sources. At the same time, the merger between the Unitarians and the Universalists was almost derailed at the last minute by a controversy over one line in the Constitution that was part of the principles and purposes that eventually became our seven principles, also on the back of your order of service. So there's a line there in that original 1961 principles and purposes that referred to, quote, our Judeo-Christian heritage. And there were some people who said, it's actually not my Judeo-Christian heritage, so there's a lot of controversy about that. This was in the midst of a five-hour joint session where nerves became frayed. Who's been in a five-hour meeting before with hundreds and hundreds of people, right? It's painful, right? Nerves became frayed. There were frequent moments of great tension and intense differences of opinion. The day was saved when a mutually agreeable language of the Judeo-Christian heritage was reached. So not our, but the. So this resolution showed, in the words of one historian, that Unitarians were beginning to move beyond their theist-humanist controversy that was really high in the 1920s and 1930s, and the Universalists were willing to move beyond their exclusively Christian orientation. In the process, both bodies became more willing to accept diversity within their ranks. And 50 years later, this trend of celebrating diversity is seen in our expansion to six sources, of which Judaism and Christianity are one. They're the fourth source, but they're one among many. I should add, however, that despite all the similarities between the two traditions, that the versus our controversy, you know, definite article, no, plural possessive pronoun, you know, like this is starting to get really grammar nerdy. This the versus our controversy did expose a significant, if closing, gap between the Universalists and the Unitarians, even as they were uniting. And that remaining gap really is the primary reason that we inherited this unwieldy 10-syllable name, that it was both traditions were coming together and neither was willing to give up their name. Unitarians didn't just want to become conflated into the Universalists. The Universalists didn't want to just become as Unitarians. So we became the Unitarian Universalist. It's two major traditions with their own history coming together. As opposed to other names that were suggested along the way, the Universal Church, the United Liberal Church of America, the Free Church of America, or the Free Church Fellowship. I should also add that Liberal Church of America, that's theological, philosophical liberalism, which doesn't necessarily entail political liberalism. I'm going to do a sermon in November where I explain that in depth, if that doesn't make sense, but anyway. In short, many Universalists feared that at the merger, in particular, that their Universalist distinctives would be swallowed up by the more numerous and influential Unitarians, you know, with their Harvard, you know, the H-bomb pedigrees and used to getting their way. And of particular offense, especially early on in the early 1960s, was referring to the Unitarian Universalists as, oh, they're the Unitarians. Because what did the Universalists hear? We're being left out, right? At that time, that practice of simplifying it to just the Unitarians was so common, even at meetings of the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association Board of Trustee meetings, that trustees began to be, they actually imposed fines on trustees who in meetings said the Unitarians. So it was that extreme to sort of, they're like, we're going to actually have to fine you to change the practice, to make you more aware of that linguistic difference and to be more conscious of including the Universalists. Now, moving to the culmination of this gradual century-long movement toward merger, some of you will recall in last week's sermon that there was a famous conflict in the lead-up to World War I between former U.S. President William Howard Taft, who eventually became Supreme Court Justice, in the interim period was president of one of the Unitarian General Conferences, and he really supported the Unitarians and the Universalists, or the Unitarians at that time, making a public statement in favor of the war. John Haynes Holmes, an influential minister and Unitarian minister and pacifist, was strongly opposed to the Unitarians making a public support of World War I. And as you may remember, Holmes' side lost overwhelmingly. They lost, and leading him and his congregation for a time to leave the Unitarian fold. Interestingly, a few decades later, at that worship service in 1960 in May, celebrating the vote, so the formal merger was in 61, but the votes happened in 60, celebrating that the Unitarians and the Universalists separately voted overwhelmingly to join together. And at the worship service after that, it was John Haynes Holmes' successor at that same congregation, the Community Church of New York, who was chosen to preach the sermon about the Unitarian, celebrating the Unitarians and the Universalists coming together. And that evening, 2,000 Unitarians and Universalists, now Unitarian Universalists for the first time, came together and joined in this pledge together. We, Unitarians and Universalists, children of the Judeo-Christian heritage, inheritors of the wisdom of the universal prophets, eager to experience the insights of the great faiths of the world, open to all sources of inspiration, ancient and modern, determined to explore the boundless ocean of truth, the boundless ocean of truth which lies about on every hand, on and before, and welcoming into fellowship all of humanity, whatever background of faith, here together on this night of consolidation, conscious of the presence of the past and of our urgent tasks, dedicate ourselves anew to a free and universal fellowship of humankind that is the church to be. We declare our allegiance to the new Unitarian Universalist Association and pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our faith to its high purpose and its sure upbringing. The delegates present on that historic occasion said that the emotional climax of the evening came as the two groups again joined together after the vote for worship. And as they streamed into the sanctuary as a new uniting body, they sang the processional hymn, As Tranquil Streams. And that was an appropriate title because it took a century, right? It was not rushing rapids that brought them together. It was a century-long Tranquil Streams. They sang that hymn, As Tranquil Streams. They just kept singing it over and over until all 2,000 people were together in that one sanctuary. As with so many moments of history, the vote could have been otherwise if that the hour controversy and other things had gone differently. But in this case, years, really a century, of hope and work resulted in inclusivity and unity. Our sixth principle holds up that lofty goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. But history shows us how difficult it is, even for two pretty similar theologically liberal denominations to come together into any sort of community. We have to start somewhere. In a few moments, we'll sing together that historic hymn, As Tranquil Streams. But first, I invite you to hear the lyrics read. As you hear them, and then as we sing them together, continue reflecting on your response to the question, why Unitarian Universalism? As tranquil streams that meet and merge and flow as one to seek the sea, our kindred hearts and minds unite to build a church that shall be free. Free from the bonds that bind the mind, to narrow thought and lifeless creed. Free from a social code that fails to serve the cause of human need. A freedom that reveres the past but trusts the dawning future more. And bids the soul in search of truth adventure boldly and explore. Prophetic church, the future awaits your liberating ministry. Go forward in the power of love. Proclaim the truth that makes us free. I invite you to rise and sing together.